Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Cheers is filmed before a live studio audience.
Why don't you introduce me to your coworkers? I'm sure they'd get a bang out of this.
Oh, I don't really think that, Hello, Sam. Walter Franklin, Sam Malone.
How do you do?
Ted.
He's able to tell you instantly how many letters there are in any sentence you say.
66.
Well, that's quite a gift.
15. Been at it all weekend.
How many days did it seem like?
24.
Listen, Walter, I have to go to work now. Thanks again for a lovely weekend.
2 sentences, 30 and 28.
Stop doing that, Walter.
19.
I mean it.
7. Goodbye, Diane. Nice seeing you, Sam.
Yeah.
4.
By the way, Walter.
14. Yes, Sam. What is it?
How was Diane on a scale of 100?
29.
Hello, and welcome to Who Will Save Generation X, the trivia game show that is dedicated to remembering, celebrating, and preserving all the wonderful qualities of Generation X through games, trivia, and friends. I am Zabe, the host of the show, and I am very excited to be back with our third format of the show that we've added to our program. It's a shorter version of the podcast that we can release in between regular episodes of the show and the home games, where it's just the listeners versus the podcast to see how many points you can get. No prizes or ranks, just a quick mini game to satisfy that nostalgic itch for the pop culture of Generation X. Here's how the game works. We will have 3 fast-paced rounds of games to play and score points. In round 3, we have a special guest host take over the show and quiz me for 5 questions. If you can get more questions correct than I can, then you are invited to use our website answering machine system to mock me endlessly.
I've known sheep that could outwit you. I've worn dresses with higher IQs, but you think you're an intellectual, don't you, ape?
Whatever, judges. Anyway, you're invited to use our answer machine to call in and take over as host for a moment and ask me 5 trivia questions that we can use on an upcoming episode. Just go to our website and click on that blue microphone icon and leave us a message. It's 100% free to use, and it can be accessed from any device that has an internet connection and a microphone. We would love to hear your voice on the show.
Now we're up to our long-distance dedication.
Before we start round 1, the judges tell me that we have a special long-distance dedication for this episode. Someone used our website to call our show and make a dedication. So let's hear it now.
Hey judges, Zabe, it's Robin, and for this episode of The Challenging Stage, I was hoping that I could do a long-distance dedication to my dad for his birthday this month. He's a friend and 2-time guest of the show who is absolutely doing his part to save Generation X. So what do you say? Can we do a special episode for Paul Rogers?
Paul has been on the show several times and is a longtime Patreon supporter. And since we let our Patreon supporters do pretty much whatever they want around here, we're going to have all the trivia of this episode be centered around all the Gen X pop culture favorites of Paul Rogers. Happy birthday, Paul. This one's for you, buddy.
Happy birthday, Paulie.
Round 1.
During our Halloween episode this year, it was pointed out to us that we did not play a certain game that we always play every Halloween.
Could it be...
Yes, we did not play Satanic Panic this year. But seeing how this episode comes out so close to Christmas, it kind of feels weird to play it now and fix that error. Christmas is the time of year where many people celebrate the birth of Jesus. So how can we possibly play a game called Satanic Panic in this episode? Well, that's kind of the whole point, isn't it? Satan had nothing to do with the devil hiding and all the fun things we liked growing up that scared certain parents. So to honor those parents' love of bringing the devil into places that he for sure was not, we're going to play this round of Satanic Panic, even being so close to Christmas, and not hear any devil worship here either.
Possibly satanic messages on some rock music recordings.
For this game, I will play parts of five popular Gen X songs, and you will need to give me the artist and title of those songs. However, to once again honor those overprotective parents, we're going to play the songs backwards, and unlike our parents, not hear any messages from Satan. Score yourself 1 point for artist and 1 point for title, 2 points possible for each song, since this is kind of difficult. Song one is from 1987, and it is a post-punk new wave song from an English band. And as a final hint, this song went all the way to number 43 in the summer of 1987 in New Zealand. I hope that last hint didn't just totally give it away, but here we go. Do you have your answer ready? Here is the reveal. That was Echo and the Bunnymen with their song, Lips Like Sugar. As we said, this song charted in New Zealand, but not in the United States. It wasn't until MTV started playing the music video on 120 minutes did the song reach the ears of many Americans. Speaking of the video, it is pretty wacky. If you remember, it starts out with a regular grainy black and white performance by the band until, for some unknown reason, the Bunny Men are hunted by a couple of women in lurid spacesuits that end up on a low-budget set made up to look like the moon or something. And they play their instruments with oversized papier-mâché planets completely covering their heads. It makes no sense. But clearly, the Kiwis loved it back in the day. Song 2 was from 1984, and Google says that this is a alternative rock, alternative indie song. But it also says that it is a children's music song, which it absolutely is not. More on that later. Okay, listen close. Title and artist of this song right here. It is beautiful played forward or backwards, but tell me the artist and title of that song right now for 2 more points. Ready? Here's the reveal. That, of course, was How Soon Is Now, recorded by The Smiths. How Soon Is Now was the perfect anthem for moody teens everywhere, especially those who had mastered the brooding while pretending not to brood look. With a hypnotic tremolo guitar riff that sounds like the world's saddest helicopter, and Morrissey's beautifully melodramatic vocals made it the soundtrack to stare wistfully out of rainy bus windows. Few songs capture the exquisite drama of overthinking at 2 a.m., quite like How Soon Is Now. It's the musical embodiment of wanting to go to a party, not going to the party, then feeling sad about how you never get to go to parties. Johnny Marr created that legendary guitar shimmer using multiple amps, delay effects, and studio wizardry, then shrugged and claimed, it's no big deal. Despite its gloomy vibe, the song was recorded during a surprisingly cheerful studio period. Johnny Marr remembered it and said it was fun, proving that at least one Smith was having a good time. This is a fantastic song, but like we said, Morrissey is not writing songs for children. Judges, can you back me up on this one?
I never liked school, and I never actually liked children.
Let's move on to a band that is a little more cheery. Song 3 is from 1979, and it is a new wave post-punk rock song. Don't be fooled by other labels people like to place on this Hall of Fame band. Here's song number 3, backwards. Yeah, This is a song from an all-time great band, which happens to be my all-time favorite. Paul, you have great taste in music, by the way. Lock in your answer, because here's the reveal. Yes, that was The Cure with Boys Don't Cry. Boys Don't Cry is the upbeat breakup anthem for anyone who has ever tried and failed spectacularly to pretend that everything was just fine. Robert Smith delivers a peppy sing-along about emotional suppression, making it perfect for skating your feelings away at 11 p.m. at the roller rink. It's the rare song that lets you happily bop along while questioning every decision you ever made in a relationship. If Denial had a theme song and bangs to cover one eye, this would be it. Boys Don't Cry is essentially Robert Smith cheerfully yelling, "I'm totally fine," while absolutely not being totally fine. It's hard to believe that this song predates the 80s. I don't have any jokes for this song because there are some things too sacred to joke about, and The Cure is one of those things. Song 4 was from 1981, and it is perhaps the prog rock song of the 1980s. Buckle up for this one, kids. If you don't know this one, just turn up the volume a little, and one of their fans will suddenly materialize as if Scotty just beamed them down next to you. Forward or backwards, they know this one. Listen up if you dare. The drum work alone should give this one away. Lock in your answer, because here's the reveal. The song is called Tom Sawyer, and the band is called Rush. Before I get to the fun facts for this one, Paul, remember, I did give you a compliment for your musical tastes earlier in the episode, and I hope we can still be friends. Tom Sawyer is the sound of an 80s teenager discovering confidence for the first time, usually while wearing dark sunglasses indoors and a denim jacket with far too many band buttons on it. Throw on Tom Sawyer and suddenly every Rush fan within 500 miles wakes up like Dracula, sensing fresh blood to corner you to try and convince you that they are objectively the best three-piece band of all time. Go ahead and ask them. They'll tell you. Neil Peart's drum part is famously difficult, which means Rush fans have spent decades telling you, unprompted, mind you, that no one can play it correctly except Neil, including themselves, though that won't stop them from trying loudly in Guitar Center. Rush packs 14 time signatures, 900 drum strokes, and exactly zero chill into a single track, guaranteeing that anyone who claims it's not really that complicated is lying to both you and themselves. Listening to Tom Sawyer is like being trapped in a Best Buy while three employees test out every piece of equipment at once. Geddy Lee sounds like a smoke alarm learning to feel emotions. Alec Lifeson plays as if he was auditioning for the role of guy falling down a staircase with a guitar. And Neil Peart hits drums with the frantic energy of a raccoon trapped in a trash can. It's nostalgic, it's dramatic, and it is the perfect song for people who correct grammar on the internet for fun. Turns out this is also one of Paul's favorite bands, so we gave it the best roasting we could, you know, like good friends do. Actually, all of the songs from this round are from Paul's favorite bands, so it's proof that 4 out of 5 bands that Paul loves are great. That's a pretty good percentage, Paul. That's pretty good. And finally, song 5 is from 1978, and it is a song that is listed as a dance rock, punk rock, surf rock song, but really they just might need to have their own genre named after them, because I really don't know where to put them myself. Yeah. You might need to rewind this episode and listen to that again, but if you got it now, it's worth 2 points. If you can give me the name of the artist and title, here's the reveal. Yes, that was Rock Lobster with their famous song by the B-52s. Rock Lobster is the audio equivalent of finding yourself at a beach party hosted by aliens who learned about Earth culture exclusively from Aquaman comic books being parodied by Mad Magazine. It's wacky, but awesome. The B-52s turn marine life into party animals, literally, and the moment the "there goes a narwhal" line drops, you're either dancing uncontrollably or questioning your life choices. With its hypnotic riff and absolute refusal to behave like a normal song, Rock Lobster became a neon-colored anthem for misfits everywhere and remains proof that the 80s were an era where creativity was measured strictly on the levels of joyful nonsense. Kate Pearson and Cindy Wilson's high-pitched wails were partly influenced by Yoko Ono's vocal style, which is why John Lennon immediately noticed the song when he heard it. John Lennon was reportedly so inspired by Rock Lobster's wild vocal sounds that it helped him push him back into recording after a 5-year break. And then he was murdered. Way to go, B-52s! Once again, we see that nothing good happens when you involve Yoko Ono. But now that we've ruined Paul's birthday party talking about John Lennon's murder and general thoughts on Rush, let's move on to round two.
Round two.
Round two this episode is our Spotlight Trivia Round. We will dive into one Gen X topic to quiz you on. Each complete correct answer is worth 2 points if you know the answer outright, but if you need the hint or multiple choice, then it is worth only 1 point. I'll ask the questions and then circle back with the answers at the end of the round. Good luck! The spotlight topic for this episode was picked because it is one of Paul's favorite TV shows, and since I'm too broke to get him a proper birthday present, this will have to do. The show brings us back to the days when our TVs only had a few channels and nobody could skip commercials, and Cheers became the show people planned their Thursday nights around. In an era when TV families were perfect, hairstyles were enormous, and everyone feared their VCRs might eat their favorite tape, Cheers crashed into the 80s like a bar stool through a window and reminded America that the most iconic place on television just might be a basement pub full of lovable disasters whose collective emotional maturity is, well, a work in progress. What started as a cozy little bar with a failing pilot season blossomed into a cultural phenomenon that introduced us to Diane's intellectual monologues, Carla's Olympic-level sarcasm, and Sam's perpetual midlife crisis. The show unified viewers with its perfect blend of heart, sarcasm, and relatability. It redefined ensemble comedy, launched characters so unforgettable that they still get referenced today, and turned his theme song into a generational anthem of emotional comfort and mild avoidance. It turned the simple act of entering a bar into a standing ovation and cemented itself as the show that taught America the value of a chosen family, even one that heckles you daily. Cheers is a reminder that sometimes you really do just want to go where everybody knows your name. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Cheers. All right, let's start with something really easy.
Question number one.
Cheers had a lot of guest stars and celebrity cameos, especially the later seasons as the show grew in popularity. In season 9, Kevin McHale of the Boston Celtics makes a cameo as a guest bartender being recruited for the bar's rivalry basketball game with Gary's Old Town Tavern, the rival bar of Cheers. In the episode, Sam wants to recruit a different sports star, but can't due to Woody's refusal to work with, quote, a doofus from French Lick, Indiana. Your question is, who is the professional athlete that Sam wants to use as a ringer for the game? If you know this Hall of Fame athlete right now, it will score you 2 points. But if you need the following multiple choice options to get it right, then it will be worth only 1 point. Did Sam want A, Robert Parrish? B, Wade Boggs? C, Larry Bird? D, Bill Walton? Or is it E, Eddie Lebeque?
Question number two.
On a show full of iconic characters, it is impossible to pick a favorite, but if we had to, it would probably be Carla Tortelli. She and Sam were both the heart of the show, and you felt their friendship drive the show as well as the bar. Carla contains multitudes. She's a diehard Red Sox fan, a loyal friend, and a single mother, among other things. At the start of the show, Carla has four kids, but by the end of the show, she was the mother of how many kids? If you know this answer right now, it's worth 2 points. But for 1 point, you get the multiple choice options. How many kids did Carla have? Is it A, 6, B, 8, C, 9, D, 10, or is it E, 69?
69, dudes!
Question number three.
In season three, Sam, who was a high school dropout, decides to get his high school diploma and turns to Coach for help in passing a geography class. Coach shares his strategy for learning new information with Sam. For 2 points, what was Coach's study trick? Okay, maybe this one's not so easy. I mean, when you're talking about Coach, it could literally be anything. However, if you know it right now, it's worth 2 points. But here is your 1 point clue. Take a listen to this audio clip from the episode and see if you can figure out the answer to what is Coach's study trick when learning new information.
Now, Sam, you can learn about anything in this world if you'll just follow my little trick. Got it? Albania. Or should we say Albania?
Why'd you say it like that?
Question number four.
John Ratzenberger gained a lot of fame from this show as the obnoxious and delusional pseudo-intellectual mailman Cliff Clavin. As a government employee, Cliff considers him a public servant of the same ranks as the military and doesn't mind treating his job with the same pomp and circumstance. In season 7, Cliff falls in love with a fellow postal worker, leading to an office scandal that causes his new love to lose her job. When she proposes they move to Canada and join the Canadian Postal Service, Cliff is ready to go with her, until a reminder of what patriotic song changes his mind. Here's an audio clue.
Margaret, you're a fine woman. But I can't leave my country. My place is here, in America. I can't leave my home. Can't you stay here with me?
I'm a mail carrier, Cliff. I have to deliver the mail.
I understand.
If you know that song right now, it's worth 2 points. But for 1 point, here's your hint. Is it A, Ballad of the Green Berets? B, God Bless America? C, Battle Hymn of the Republic? D, Ragged Old Flag by Johnny Cash? Or is it E, Living in America by James Brown?
I feel good. Jam!
And finally, question number five.
Norm was another of Cheers' beloved regular patrons. In fact, he was probably the most regular patron, as the entire bar was known to shout his name in greeting when he entered. For 2 points, listen to the audio clue and tell us the next line.
Afternoon, everybody.
Norm! Hey, Norm, how's the world been treating you?
We're not going to leave you hanging out to just randomly guess. So for 1 point, you get multiple choice options to Norm's reply to, how's the world been treating you? Is it A, like it caught me in bed with its wife? B, like I just ran over its dog? C, like a baby treats its diaper? D, I'm on top of the world, which is a dismal place in Greenland somewhere. Or is it E, this clip right here?
Morning, everyone.
Hey!
What are you up to, Norm?
My ideal weight if I were 11 feet tall.
Now that you've had a little time to think about the questions, here are the answers. Question one was, who was the professional athlete that Sam wants to use as a ringer for the game? The correct answer is, of course, the great Larry Bird. Other Boston-specific cameos include Louis Tient, and Wade Boggs of the Red Sox.
Well, welcome to Cheers, Mr. Wade Boggs.
I know all these shows were mostly filmed in L.A., but I enjoy when a show celebrates the town they're representing. They did this in Frasier 2 with Seattle sports stars, but sadly, Sean Kemp was never one of them. Speaking of having 8 million kids, question 2 asked you, how many kids did Carla have? The correct answer was option B, 8 children. Carla has one more kid with her ex-husband, Nick, a love child with Frasier's mentor, Dr. Bennett Ludlow, and twins with her short-lived second husband, Eddie LeBeck. Carla Tortelli, played by Rhea Perlman, was originally written as a small supporting character until Perlman delivered so much snark, spite, and comedic fire that writers redesigned the ecosystem of Cheers around her insults.
Just yesterday, some lonely, frustrated housewife saw me coming up the garden path, you know, peeking through the window. And she tries to coyly titillate me by pulling down the shade, so I wonder what's going on behind it.
Let me dispel the mystery. She was puking.
Carla's dating life on Cheers made soap operas look restrained. She dated jocks, crooks, losers, legends, and at least two men who seemed like they wandered in from a different show entirely.
Hello.
No, judges, not those guys. Is that going to be a thing with you now? We're just saying that Carla liked dudes, but had terrible taste in men. Let's just move on to question 3, okay? I asked you to name Coach's study trick to help Sam. What was it? The correct answer is, he makes random lyrics about what he's studying to the tunes of old songs.
1, 2, 3. Albania, Albania, you border on the Adriatic. Your land is mostly mountainous, and your chief export is chrome. You're a communist republic. You're a red regime. Sing it, Sam.
Coach was played by the legendary Nicholas Colasanto, a former boxer and decorated Navy veteran who somehow transformed into TV's most lovable, absent-minded bartender. Coach's character was originally written to be a cranky, world-weary mentor, but Colasanto played him with such warm, earnest confusion that the writers pivoted fast. Suddenly, every scene became 50% heartfelt advice and 50% glorious misunderstanding. Colasanto kept a framed photo of Native American civil rights activist Don Red Eagle Eagle in his dressing room and later on the show's set. After he passed away, the cast hung the picture on the bar wall in his honor, and it stayed there for the rest of the series. If you're ever wondering, what's the deal with the Native American picture on the wall? That's your answer. Question 4 was, what patriotic song changes Cliff's mind to stay in the United States instead of delivering envelopes of maple syrup in Canada? The correct answer is The Ballad of the Green Berets. Earlier in the episode, the guys are talking about what a great song it is. As Cliff heads for the door and his new life, Woody walks by singing the song under his breath and in a burst of American pride decides to put his career first.
But Cliff, it'll be so terrible. I'll be so cold and all alone. Who will keep me warm?
You'll do fine, Margaret. Women have that extra layer of fat.
Creating fun facts about Cliff feels meta, because Cliff is usually the one creating fun facts about you, but we're going to give it a try. Cliff Clavin, played by John Ratzenberger, wasn't even supposed to exist at first. He invented the character during his audition by suggesting the bar needed a know-it-all and convincing the producers that he was right. Strange how this ultimately became his character on the show. Cliff's postal uniform became so iconic that real mail carriers wrote in saying that they felt represented, which is wild considering Cliff spent most of his time anywhere but delivering the mail.
100 men will test one day, but only 3 wear the green beret.
And finally, question 5 asked you to tell us the next line from this classic Norm greeting.
Hey Norm, how's the world been treating you?
The correct answer is option C.
Like a baby treats a diaper.
Of course we'd pick the grossest one. Have you guys ever listened to the show before? All of the options were actual responses from Norm to a question like, how's life treating you? But this particular clip that we played was from season 5, episode 6. Norm Peterson, played by the late great George Wendt, is one of the few TV characters whose arrival consistently received applause, not because he did anything impressive, but because he successfully entered a bar. George Wentz once revealed that the beer Norm drank on the set was actually near beer, and nothing says a good time like having to drink a gallon of warm O'Doul's every episode.
Afternoon, everybody.
Hey, Mr. Peterson, Jack Frost nipping at your nose?
Yeah, now let's get Joe Beer nipping at my liver, huh?
Next, we move on to round three and have one of our listeners guest host the show to ask me some trivia questions. But before we do that, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor.
Stay tuned. Cheers will be right back.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to six guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you would like to try your hand at guest hosting this next segment and share your trivial knowledge of the fun things of Generation X, then send the judges an email at whowillsavegenx@gmail.com and let's talk about it. Or for faster results, you can just go to our website at whowillsavegenx.com and leave us a message on our answer machine. Just tap on that blue microphone icon on the lower right part of your screen and leave us a message. It's free to use, and your voice and trivia questions might end up on an upcoming episode. If you want your trivia questions on an upcoming Challenging Stage episode, then please be sure to leave us 5 questions so we can make a whole episode. We look forward to hearing your voice on the show. Thanks.
So who's gonna save a generation? Are you gonna save a generation? Who will save Generation X?
Round 3.
I am the guy who normally asks the questions. But in this segment, we're going to turn things around and have one of our listeners ask the questions to see if I can do my part to save Generation X. Our special guest host this episode comes from our website answering machine. I have not heard these questions yet, but the judges have deemed them worthy to be on the show. We will play the message, get my answer, and then the correct answer before we move on to the next question. Let's see how this works out.
Message 1.
Hi, Zabe. This is Paul. I've got 5 questions for you for the challenging stage. Most of these are sports related, but there is also a TV related question at the end.
Hey everybody, it's the birthday boy himself, Paul. What are the odds that he would be the special guest on his special birthday episode? Pretty good when you plan it just right. If the sports questions are about basketball, I'm golden. Any other sport, I'm probably screwed. But the TV question has me intrigued. Let's go for it.
So we'll start with the first question.
That is a fantastic place to start at the beginning. Let's go.
The University of Southern California, Buffalo, New York, and Police Squad are all connected to this one celebrity. Can you name the celebrity?
So you gave me the hint with sports. You said a city in Buffalo. Makes me think the only sports team I know in Buffalo is Buffalo Bills from the NFL. USC. Makes me think football, so that connection goes well there. And then you throw Police Squad as a curveball. Had you said Naked Gun, the answer would obviously be O.J. Simpson, because he played for the Bills and went to USC. But you said Police Squad, that's a TV show, so I don't know the name of the actor that played Nordberg on the TV show. It was not O.J. Simpson, I know that. So you're trying to trick me, Paul. I'm not going to fall for it because I'm not an idiot. And I'm going to say the random actor guy that played Nordberg on Police Squad. And I've already got the answer incorrect, I'm sure, because I don't know his name. I don't remember who played Nordberg on the TV show, but I got to give an answer. I got to give a name. I don't want to get slimed. If I had multiple choice, I might be able to get it off the list, but I don't know. The Zucker brothers love to use old-timey actors in their shows and movies. So let me think of someone who was kind of an older actor. This can't be correct because I would remember him being on the show. But I'm going to go with the legendary actor of James Gardner. Mostly because it allows me to play one of the world's greatest theme songs ever while we listen to your answer.
And the answer in 3, 2, 1, O.J. Simpson. He played at the University of Southern California. He was played for the Bills out of Buffalo, New York. And he was in the television show Police Squad.
Well, wow, I'm learning all kinds of things this episode. A, I didn't know the Juice was on a TV show in the early 80s, a show I watched every episode of and never saw him once on. And B, my whole life I was calling them the Buffalo Bills when I just found out that they're really the Buffalo Bills from Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo, New York.
All right, I guess the correct answer is O.J. the Juice Simpson from the TV show Police Squad, who played for the Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo, New York.
Oh, what's that, judges? Oh, the corrections department has something to say? Oh, the random guy was named Peter Lupus. Thank you, corrections department. I appreciate that. If you would have said the Naked Gun, then that question makes perfect sense. But you didn't. So I guess Peter Lupus is the right answer. Although, what does he have to do with Buffalo and USC? So the answer is either Peter Lupus or O.J. Simpson. Judges, will you give our listeners a point if they say either O.J. Simpson or Peter Lupus? Cool, that means I get a point. Except for I didn't say either one of them. Damn it! So all you listeners get a point, except for me. But at least we all found out how to pronounce Buffalo. All right, let's move on to the next question.
Okay, question number 2. This sports program regularly aired on Saturday afternoon and brought us what 2 elements of sport? Bonus question if you can name the episode or the program.
Wait, what? There's a show on Saturdays that combined 2 elements of sport, and you want me to name that program, and I get a bonus question if I can name that program. Okay, so I'm going to get a bonus question either way, then, as well as getting the point, I guess. All right, so what was on Saturdays? Dude, I was at friend's house playing with Star Wars figures and G.I. Joes on Saturdays. I wasn't watching a lot of TV once cartoons went off. But the only sports program that I can think of that combined 2 different things was the Battle of the Network Stars, which combined the sports of throwing a softball at a target at a dunk tank to watch Suzanne Summers get all wet. So that's kind of a sport, a dunk tank. No, you're throwing a baseball or a softball or whatever. It's combining the sport of fulfilling your television contract obligations by having Charles Nelson Reilly throw a softball at a target while you sit in the dunk tank. Paul, reveal the answer. Is it the Battle of the Network Stars?
It was the wide world of sports, and it brought us the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
I'm not sure I ever watched the wide world of sports, but I do remember that slogan, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. My dad would say it all the time whenever we'd play Monopoly. So I guess that's where he got it from. Well, I guess I don't get the bonus question. Or, wait a second. I got it wrong, so I don't get the bonus question. But how would you know whether I get it right or wrong or not? So I guess if this next question isn't a bonus question, then that means you just had no faith in me that I'd get it correct in the first place and wouldn't even include it on the episode. That's cold, man. Have a little faith. I'm sure I'll get the next question correct. So let's see if you move on to question 3 or you give me the bonus question. That will determine whether you have any faith in me or not.
Question number 3.
Oh, how
and
dare you.
I will give you a bonus point if you even come close to this. What Hall of Fame Chicago Bears player was on 27 episodes of a 1980s sitcom? Bonus point if you can name the sitcom.
Well, the first name that popped to my mind was Alex Karras, who played George Papadopoulos on the TV show Webster, but he was a main character, so he's on there way more than just, what do you say, 27 episodes? So it can't be him, and I have no idea whether he played on the Bears or not. So I got to think about the Bears players that I know of. Hall of Fame players include Walter Payton. I don't think he's going to be on sitcoms. William the Refrigerator Perry was a G.I. Joe action figure. I don't think he was an actor on a sitcom. Jim McMahon, he had that star kind of quality to him. He's a possibility. I don't know if he's in the Hall of Fame or not. But those were active players in the 80s. I can't imagine that they're going to take time out of their NFL careers to be on a sitcom that many episodes, even during the offseason. So it's probably not an active player during the 80s. So the only former Chicago Bear that was on my television set growing up during the 80s, I know he was in like beer commercials and like antifreeze commercials for like Prestone or something.
I'll make that Quaker State.
I'm going to go with the one and only Dick Butkus. And the sitcom that would get the most mileage from somebody named Dick Butkus in the 80s would have to be Married with Children. So that's my final answer. Dick Butkus appears on 27 episodes of Married with Children. Total wild guess. But remember, you said you'd give me a point if I got even close. So judges, you're going to have to give the final say on whether I was close or not. But whether I'm right or wrong, I still get to play this sound drop.
Hit it!
Dick Butkus. Who the hell would ever name their kid that? Dick Butkus. It's Dick Butkus!
Answer in 3, 2, 1, Dick Butkus,
woo-hoo!
Hall of Fame linebacker for the Chicago Bears, was on 27 episodes of My Two Dads.
All right, back on track. I didn't get the sitcom, but I feel like I'm in good company with the rest of the listeners for not coming up with My Two Dads, for crying out loud. Let's move on to question 4, or maybe my bonus question that you still owe me.
Okay, question number 4, and I'm sure at this point you have exactly 0 points.
Hold up. Paul, I have as many points as you have as many correct questions asked.
One of my favorite movies is Point Break. This movie featured a group of surfers that robbed banks and called themselves the ex-presidents. Can you name the 4 presidents?
All right, this feels like a 4-part question. 100% Ronald Reagan was on it. I think that was Patrick Swayze's character wore that one. I'm pretty confident Richard Nixon was one of the 4 presidents. The last two I'm going back and forth on. It's either Washington and Lincoln, or I'm thinking it's more recent presidents because they would have masks available to even wear. So I'm thinking Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford. That's 4 of the most recent presidents up to that point in time when the movie was made. I think Bush was president, though, when that came out, actually. Did they have Bush? Oh, no, I'm going back and forth. I'm doing too much. I'm just going to go with, but they're the ex-presidents, so Bush probably wouldn't be one of them, so because he was the current president. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with the 4 of Reagan, Nixon, Ford, and Carter.
And the answer in 3, 2, 1, it was Nixon, Reagan, Carter, and Lyndon Baines Johnson.
I think, like most people, they forgot that Gerald Ford was even a president. 3 out of 4, maybe I'll get a pity point, maybe? Question mark?
Okay, finally, question number 5. The 1984-85 NBC lineup was iconic. Can you name the 5 shows that ran from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. every Thursday night? Bonus points if you can get them in order of appearance.
So 5 TV shows from 8 p.m. till 11 p.m. I just remember a bunch of half-hour sitcoms during that time. So 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. couldn't fit 5 half-hour sitcoms. I seem to remember a Thursday night lineup of The Cosby Show. Then I think it went to Family Ties. Then I think it went to Cheers. And then ended it with Night Court. But I also remember that they also tried to shoehorn in A Different World. And I think 227 was a part of that lineup at one point. But I don't know if that's in the 84-85 season. I think that came later. I think both those shows came later, if I'm not mistaken. I'm solid on those first 4. of Cosby Show, Family Ties, Cheers, and Night Court. But if you're telling me there's five shows in a three-hour block of television, that means one would have to be an hour-long program. That makes me think it's some sort of drama. And hour-long dramas were not my jam back in the mid-80s. I turned the TV off as soon as Night Court ended. So I'm going to go with a classic NBC hour-long drama, a police procedural show that I've never watched a single episode of, and it's going to be Hill Street Blues. And we're going to stick with that order. Cosby Show, Family Ties, Cheers, Night Court, and Hill Street Blues.
And the answer in 3, 2, 1, The Cosby Show, Family Ties, Cheers, Night Court, and Hill Street Blues.
Woohoo! Yes!
Hope you did great, Zabe. Hey, Zabe, and one final note. Just want to make sure you know that Rush is a way better band than the Smiths. That's all. Thanks.
End of messages.
Well, we finally got that bonus question of a true or false of is Rush a better band than the Smiths? And my answer for that true or false is 100% false. So I'm going to give myself a bonus point on that one for the sixth question. I'm so glad that you included that bonus at the very end. Thank you, Paul. So I guess I end up with a score of 3 points, one for Dick Butkus, one for the NBC lineup, and of course, one for the true or false at the very end. So listeners, if you can honestly tell me you got more than 3 points correct on this round of trivia, I'm not sure how many points were available. There's a lot of bonus points flying around on this one. I kind of lost track. But if you beat my score of 3, then you are welcome to call our website answer machine and tell me how many points you got and rub it in a little bit if you'd like. I did very poorly on this round of trivia, so I guess I deserve a little bit of scorn on this one.
Count on it, pee-drinking crap face!
Yeah. Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to send us these questions and taking over as guest host for this episode. Paul, you rule. I hope you have a happy birthday, my friend. I'd like to thank Paul Rogers for being our special guest host this episode. We'd love to involve all of you on our podcast, so get in touch with us on our answer machine or email us at whowillsavegenx@gmail.com, and we'll see about you becoming a contestant on the show or maybe even being the next guest host on an upcoming edition of The Challenging Stage. Well, that's it for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We welcome you to contact us and let us know what you think of this episode. Your feedback is always appreciated, and it would be awesome if you would please give us a positive review on wherever you're downloading this episode from. As always, we welcome you to share this podcast with that special Gen Xer in your life and subscribe to the show for future episodes where we will once again ask the question, who will save Generation X? Later.
This ain't paste picante sauce.
What's the difference?
Cookie, paste picante sauce is made in San Antonio with fresh vegetables and spices by people who know what picante sauce is supposed to taste like.
This stuff's made in
Buffalo, New York.
Get a rope.
Pick up the original. Pick up the paste.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.